Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution of the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is an old friend, New York State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli, a Democrat who spent two decades in the Assembly before becoming a very active comptroller in 2007. Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, welcome back to the show.
Alan, great to be back with you. Our first show for the new year of 2013. I hope it's a good year for all of us.
Okay. So, Tom, I wanted to ask you a question, and I'm sorry. I always tell my students, if you don't know something, ask. So I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
Is it comptroller or controller?
Well, the age-old debate. So in New York, by constitution, it's comp, C-O-M-P. But I'm told that pronouncing it like it's spelled con, C-O-N, is totally appropriate. So the comptroller, the derivation apparently is from the French, basically compute, meaning numbers and dollars, I guess, in this case. But whether it's comp or con, as long as it's in front of my name, I'm totally fine with it.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so this week you've announced, as we speak, that the retirement fund is freezing its investment in commercial firearm manufacturers. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little about that.
Well, we always, of course, have as our priority making money for the common retirement fund that supports the retirement benefits for the over 1 million members of our fund, retirees, active employees who hope to be retirees and beneficiaries. But we also certainly want to do things in a way that also is sensitive to the fact that where you put your money and the, you know, kind of corporate behavior that goes on is also important to making money. So we always have a very active review of where investments are at. Obviously, there's a tremendous amount of attention on the whole gun issue in the wake of Newtown, and a very changed legal environment, you know, in terms of New York. We certainly see the action that happened this week on the gun issue. Washington, the president issuing executive orders and proposing changes in federal law. And all of that, I think, suggests a certain economic shift in terms of the dynamics. So using our fiduciary responsibility and looking at what analysts are saying about these stocks, we felt it was time to review the holdings. And really, in the wake of Newtown, we first had to make an assessment of what holdings we had. You know, we're $150 billion funds, so we're invested everywhere. And it turns out we do have some investments at the time of Newtown in companies that their primary line of business is the manufacture of firearms for commercial sale. And since Newtown, our holdings in Smith & Wesson were sold, so that we don't have any other holdings there. And we put a freeze on our holdings in Strum Ruger, which is the other commercial firearm manufacturer that we had modest holdings in, not a huge amount. But we're going to continue to assess and look at what's happening with all of our holdings that may impact on this industry. We want to look out for the fund first and foremost, but also be sensitive to the concerns that are out there about the gun industry and what's going on in too many communities across our country in terms of gun violence.
First of all, Tom DiNapoli, I want to congratulate you. I think you've done the right thing. I think you've done the gutsy thing and certainly the moral thing. But I was surprised to read somewhere or hear somewhere that because everybody was running to buy guns, that the stocks actually took a little upward tilt.
No, you're absolutely right. It is a strange psychology that at a time that you have all this concern about gun violence and talk about more responsible legislation, that in terms of the consumer response, if we could put it that way, among some in our societies, is to go out and buy even more. But when you look at the analysis that those that follow the industry, that they're suggesting, they really see that just as a temporary uptick. And in fact, long term, suggests that there'll be a lot less activity in this area. So I think it was just a response. And obviously, look, you have the NRA and others that fuel the notion that, you know, Big Brother is out to take away your liberties. And so, you know, go out and buy everything you can. It doesn't seem to me to be a reasonable response to what's going on out there. But obviously, you stoke many, many passions on this issue. That's one reason why we haven't seen, you know, more legislative action in this area sooner. But I do think, Alan, and I'm sure you perceive this, from the folks you talk to and when your listeners call in, Newtown did change the dynamic. Not that we haven't had horrible massacres and murders before, and certainly in many parts of our state, every day gun violence is impacting on families. But the notion that a sanctuary, if you will, an elementary school could be invaded in that way, and in just seconds, children mowed down. I think that just changed everybody's attitude. And to know that the weapons were bought, and there were many weapons in the home, all legal, and that it would get in the hands of the wrong person. I do think that certainly in the legislation that New York just passed and what the president's talking about, to recognize it's not just on the issue of what's available for sale, but there are mental health issues that too many folks have in our society, and when those folks get their hands on the guns, it's where you have these terrible situations happening. We have to approach this not just in terms of restricting these military-type assault weapons, but recognize that there are other weapons that some of these folks can get their hands on, and we need to have a mental health system that's more attuned to these ticking time bombs that are out there in terms of people, and make sure that that there are interventions. And that's going to be complex to achieve, but at least we're talking about it, and at least we're making changes at the state level, and hopefully the federal level, to engage the mental health system in this area.
Well, again, congratulations, Don DiNapoli, on having real guts in this situation. And I, for one, am very happy that you did it.
Thank you.
Let me start and talk to you about another issue that you've been engaged in, and that's KeyCorp. And I know that you've been concerned about its corporate spending. Maybe you could tell us what's behind all of that.
Yeah, well, we have a real concern about spending in the political arena. You know, certainly in the wake of Citizens United, you've seen even more corporate dollars going out there in terms of spending on election campaigns or lobbying efforts. Some of that's disclosed, some of it's not, depending on where the money's going. And the concern, again, just gets back to the basic fiduciary responsibility. When we invest in a company, we want to make sure that the activities the company is involved in is enhancing our investment, that they're continuing to be profitable on a sustainable basis and doing things in an ethical and appropriate way. And there's a real concern about whether or not spending in the political arena really does anything to enhance the bottom line for the company. And too much of the spending is opaque. It's not clear to people. And we've, along with other institutional investors, been engaging corporations, writing to them, asking them to have a full disclosure policy when it comes to spending in the political arena. Again, we could argue whether or not there should be this spending. We could argue about Citizens United, but at a minimum, there should be transparency, there should be disclosure, and that's the only way you can ensure that you're going to have accountability. So in the case of KeyCorp, we actually were able to work out an agreement with them, and obviously in the Capital Region, Key, in many parts of the state, Key Bank is an important player, so we're pleased that that this corporation is going to institute a disclosure policy when it comes to political spending. They're going to post it on their website. And I appreciate the fact that that the corporate leadership there responded positively to our request. That is not always what happens. And we have other instances where we've actually gone, to suit in Delaware court with another corporation to try to get access to this information. But in the case of KeyCorp, we got a positive response. We're pleased about it. We're happy to congratulate them for agreeing to this kind of disclosure.
Your clout comes from the fact that you, as a huge pension system, and California as a huge pension system, have so much in stock in some of these places that you can ask them to do it, then they better.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't always work as they do, though, which is why we also try to engage not on our own, but in concert with like-minded pension plans that feel the same way. But there's no doubt that having that role as a shareholder gives us an extra avenue in terms of putting positive pressure and using persuasion. And because, you know, keep in mind, at the end of the day, if they don't go along with it, we can take that step of a shareholder resolution. And again, that's another way to try to influence the decision making and certainly call attention. You know, what you often find in these situations is that the corporate leadership, once you draw attention to some of these problems, you suddenly get a quicker response. But you don't always find that, and sometimes you do have to take that further step of filing a resolution, or in the case of Qualcomm, as you know, where we filed a lawsuit, we'll see what the outcome of that will be. What you like to do, though, because we want to stay invested in companies that are making money. You know, sometimes people say, well, why don't you just pull all your money out on any number of issues? And in some cases, you know, that's exactly what we do. But I always think it's better when you can engage with the corporation. We want to keep our investment. Some of these investments, Alan, are often passive investments that we have through index funds. So, you know, you do want to stay engaged there. So for us, we want to stay involved. We have a very active corporate governance program. But ultimately, we like to get a good outcome in terms of improved policies and procedures that the companies we're invested in. And that way we can keep our money there, keep making money for the pension fund, and get a better outcome that gives us what we call that double bottom line, a better corporate citizen, sense of corporate citizenship on the issues like political spending, and still make money for the pension fund.
I know that the state's supposed to have a balanced budget, but there are some debts that the state has. Can you sort of give us a little report on how much indebtedness there is in New York State?
Well, we recently put out our debt impacts study. That's something we do on a regular basis. And the reality is that New York is a very highly indebted state. When you look at the broad definition of state-funded debt, we are second only to the state of California in terms of debt burden. And obviously, California is a much larger state. We've got some over $63 billion in debt outstanding. That equates to about 3,000 $325,000 debt per capita in New York. So when you compare the per capita debt to the national median debt of all the states, we're about three times higher. We're way ahead of the next closest state, which is New Jersey. So whether you're looking at the total debt burden or you're looking at the per capita debt, New York is a very highly indebted state.
How does that happen, Tom?
It happens over a long period of time. And that's one of the real challenges now, is that we have a legacy of a heavy reliance on debt, very often debt that is not for a capital purpose or investing in a capital asset. There were times in the past where debt was used for operating purposes, really what should have been pay-as-you-go expenses, and it accumulates. And although the current administration has been taking some responsible steps to get this under control, the reality is we continue to issue more new debt than retire old debt. So we don't seem to quite get ahead of it. The other challenge, I think, Alan, in New York, is that we do most of our borrowing through the public authorities, which there's no real accountability. The people don't know what's going on. Remember the old days?
Sure.
You have a proposition, you go to the polls, and you vote yes or no. Some of them passed, some of them didn't. The state constitution really vested with the voters of the state the ability to provide approval for debt. But when all the authorities got created and debt started going through the authorities, I don't think you have the same level of accountability. And that's why one of the reasons why you've had a mushrooming of debt. Now, that debt burden, only about 5% of that debt is tied to voter-approved debt. We haven't had a proposition in years. So it's nobody really sees what's going on. I think that allows for more of this to happen. And now, because in New York we do have a statutory cap on debt, we're approaching the limit on that. And by the end of the next fiscal year, we'll only have about $509 million based on current estimates in terms of debt capacity. All this happening at a time. Our infrastructure is older and older. We're in this post-Sandy environment where there's a lot of talk about not only doing what we should do in terms of upgrading infrastructure, but doing it differently, you know, recognizing that climate change, you know, is a reality and having to harden some of our assets in ways that we hadn't talked about before. So we have more needs and expectations out there than ever at a time that we have really a minimal capacity. So we really do have to get a better handle on how we're controlling debt, do a better job of prioritizing when we do borrow, where is that money going. I think we need major reforms. I think we need the constitutional amendment, and we need to restore the public's role in terms of approving debt. I think those kinds of changes long term would help us to better manage our debt burden.
So do we need these authorities?
Well, you know, we probably could do with fewer of them, and the ones we have, we would probably be better off if they were returned to their core mission. Some of them end up picking up other responsibilities that have a way of really putting demands. You know, you talk about the three authority. That's probably
sure.
The authority everybody likes to talk about, and we were pleased that despite some early grousing, they ended up coming to our point of view to not do the proposed toll increases that they had for earlier this year. But one of the big drains on the Thoreau Authority and their finances is the Canal Corporation. And while that was a well-intentioned idea to fold the Canal Corporation into the Thoreau Authority, the reality is it's cost a lot of money. People don't realize that the Thoreau Authority is supporting the canal system. And not that you don't have to do something with the canal system, but merging the two, I think you really diluted what was the core mission for the Thoreau Authority, gave an enhanced financial burden, and it's not working very well for either side, because the Canal Corporation, the goal was to make it a key driver of economic development in some of the upstate areas. That has not happened. So it would seem to me in that case, taking a more disciplined look than we've done in the past as to what would be the appropriate way to pay for the support of the canal system, and perhaps segregating it away from the Thoreau Authority. That would be one way to help put the Thoreau Authority on a firmer financial footing for the long term. But you need to do that with so many of these authorities. But, they were set up. It's easier, to blame an authority if they make an unpopular decision than an elected official. That's part of why authorities, I think, were set up. And obviously, they provide many important purposes. So I don't think we're going to do without authorities, but I certainly would like to see more accountability for the boards. I would like to see any debt issued should go back to voter-approved debt issued through the controller's office instead of all this backdoor borrowing through the authorities. I think we could rein in some of the behavior that we've seen that I think has weakened our long-term financial position, and part of that is controlling what the authorities do.
Now, Tom DiNapoli, we only have a few minutes left, so I wanted to ask you to keep these answers as short as you can. Because
that's not possible.
No, I understand. So first of all, the Tappan Zee Bridge is going to cost a lot of money to rebuild. And I know that there was some talk at some point that the governor did not want pre-audits on some of these things. I wonder where we are on that and whether you're going to be able to watch the way they're spending.
Well, we certainly have been in touch, and we are reviewing the contracts related to Tappan Zee. The big outstanding question, and we're not going to know the answer to this until the federal government weighs in, is how much of a loan are they going to provide to the state of New York? We're assuming they will be a loan, as the governor's requested. And certainly, when the project is underway, we will certainly be using our post-audit authority. This is a very expensive proposition and very, very important to all New Yorkers. So we're certainly going to keep it as a priority in terms of our review.
Are you watching things like who they pick to do the work?
Well, we would, there was a selection, and we are reviewing that selection and the documents related to that.
That sounds pregnant.
Yes.
So you have some concerns?
Well, we're doing what we're supposed to do, and this is an area where no one's questioned our contract review authority, and we're doing the due diligence.
Okay. Let me ask you about fiscal cliff. Have you been watching all of that, and did it portend bad things if it didn't work out?
It portended terrible things. So I was certainly pleased to see that there was a resolution, and particularly with the alternative minimum tax being dealt with, that would have really hurt many, many New York families had that not been addressed. But the big issue still, Alan, is what's going to happen with the budget cuts, sequestration, that's still on the table.
Sure.
We could lose in this fiscal year over $600 million. So our hope is that there'll be a resolution before March 1st on that front as well, especially as we're working on the state budget.
Now, speaking of the state budget, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we're going ahead now with the strangest kind of political animal I've ever seen, a Senate, which has basically two masters, at least for now. And we're going to have a budget process, and everybody yells and screams that the budget either gets done on time and done in this timely way. What do you think? What are you looking at here?
Well, look at how the gun issue played out. And in fact, it worked. You know, that was probably the first big test. And obviously, in addition to the independent Democrats and the Republican leadership, most of the votes came from the Democratic side of the aisle. So I would say Andrew Stewart Cousins has a key role to play in terms of delivering votes on important initiatives. So I wouldn't discount her role. It really is three key leaders there now. And I think she's going to do a terrific job, by the way. So let's hope that as the other tests come forward, certainly the budget will be one that the coolest heads will prevail, and they will continue to advance a progressive agenda. It is a strange combination when you see how the votes end up being cast, but it's a new day. We'll see how long it all holds together.
And so, do you think that, I don't know how to ask this properly, but do you think that Andrew Cuomo really owns the Republicans in New York State, that, you know, they're there by his sufferance? Let's face it, you know, he didn't veto this reapportionment bill and all the rest of it. He can pull a rug out from under them. They know it. And hence, you get things like the minimum wage increase and things like that.
Well, I was going to say, a lot of what was in his State of the State address, I don't think would have been the State of the State address that one of the Republican senators would have offered. So, again, given the close margins there, and the independent Democrats are still Democrats, I think you're going to see in the Senate, a lot of positive votes in terms of the majority of senators on the agenda that the governor's set forward. And, by and large, I think that'll be a good thing.
Now, in the old days, the Republican leader, if he didn't like an idea, he wouldn't allow it to be voted on in the Senate. Now he hasn't really got that, has he?
No. And look, the ultimate leverage that the legislature had is on the budget. And you remember Ralph Marino preventing a certain governor from running for president by holding up the budget, and certainly there were times where the Assembly Democrats and the Speaker did something like that. Once that changed, at the end of the Patterson administration, in one of the court cases there changed that. That really changed a big part of the dynamic, certainly on the budget issues, which are the biggest ones for the state, and obviously the very slim, it's hard to even call the majority, but given how the numbers are in the Senate, I'll put it that way, it's hard to say who's in the majority, right? You don't have the same leverage that a Warren Anderson had or a Ralph Marino had or a Joe Bruno had. It's a very different dynamic. But if that ensures that the good ideas get to the top of the agenda, certainly you saw that with the marriage equality legislation last year. If we keep seeing that more and more, that's not a bad thing.
What do you want to get done in 2013?
Well, we certainly are going to continue our efforts with regard to monitoring fiscal stress at the local level. I think, especially with many of our upstate cities, that's really the front line of stress and challenge. The governor mentioned putting together a task force, including my office and the Attorney General's office, to help those localities that will be in the most significant levels of stress. I think we have to recognize that decisions made at the federal level and the state level are impacting on the local level. We have to be creative. We don't want to see cities or towns or villages or counties face questions of bankruptcy. So that's certainly going to be one priority for us.
Well, wait. One second, real fast. The Cuomo tax cap, remember that?
Yeah.
Has that put insufferable responsibility on the towns and villages?
Well, the reality is that most municipalities have been able to live within the cap. The problem is that some of them that have been able to manage it, they're drawing down reserves, they're drawing down fund balances. Unless you see an uptick in the economy and tax collections or in federal and state aid, they're going to run out of options, and they may find it a lot harder to live within the cap. So it's in all of our interest to keep a closer eye on what's happening with our local municipalities and make sure that they avoid the kind of fiscal meltdowns you're seeing in some other parts of the country with their localities.
Now, we only have 1 minute, but how are you getting along with the governor?
As I've said before, our relationship has never been better, and I noted one of your predictions for the new year, and we'll wait and see if that prediction comes to pass.
So you think that cooperation is a possibility here?
Well, with all the challenges of Sandy, our staffs work very closely together on expediting payments and contracts, and the business of government has always worked well and worked best when the different branches work together, and there's never been a problem with that. And the governor was very kind to me in the introduction at the State
of
the State.
Yes, he was.
So, I think obviously he's done many good things already, and he laid out a very positive agenda for the state, and we look forward to working working with them to achieve that.
Well, our guest has been New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, an old friend of mine, I have to say, and I thank you so much, Tom, for showing up and doing this show on a regular basis. He's a Democrat in office since 2007, and we thank him for being with us. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Alan.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. Ian Pickus is producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.